On today's episode of Double Down Trent, the 100th episode, we welcome Mr. Model back onto the show as it is now March, which means college basketball. Mr. Model has been running his own data-driven model the entire college basketball season, so we welcome him on to give us the results of his model and some tips that you might want to consider while placing some bets or filling out your bracket. So stay tuned for episode number 100 of Double Down Trent.
Double Down Trent, you might want to tune in. Talking gambling and sports, predicting who might win. Pop culture to movies, let's start up the combo. Ryan and Aaron, man versus the motto. Keep it authentic and it's always live. So competitive, so you know it's always hype. Make sure you subscribe, trust you don't want to miss. Going all in here on Double Down Trent. Hey, yeah, Double Down Trent, let's go.
This is Double Down Trent.
All right, welcome to Double Down Trent, the podcast where two elementary school buddies are talking sports, gambling, and pop culture. My name is Ryan, and I am joined by my co-host, the man, the myth, the model, Mr. Model, Aaron. How you doing, bud?
It is March. I am stoked. I cannot be more excited to get up and get to doing a podcast with you all. We are in the midst of college basketball. It's one of the best times of the year. I love conference tournament. I love talking. I love getting into the data and checking stuff out. This will be a fun one.
Glad to have you back, my friend. We had people asking, where's the model? We missed you. And I had to tell him he's in the lab, and this is where we're going to give you the results. We also have got our insider, Coulter. How you doing, bud?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you guys for having me tonight. As we were talking about before the pod, the model is going to be like our Derrick Henry. He's taken 35 carries on this one. This is his area of expertise, so we totally defer to him here. We're just along for the ride. I love the structure of the physical tournament, the bracket. That's just like just makes me so excited. So the fact that we flipped the calendar and it's March and we're going to be filling those bad boys out here any day now gets me really excited. And I'm pumped to talk conference tournaments too, because growing up in Connecticut and going to the Big East tournament, Madison Square Garden and all that, I just love this time of year. And the conference tournaments definitely play into that March Madness excitement, I think. So very fun.
Can time. I just say Lawrence Moten, Jerry McNamara, those Syracuse Orange from the old days were some of my favorite guys to watch on TV. That was the highlight for me.
Wow, you're a Hughes guy, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
My grandparents are alums, so I always rooted for Cuse as well.
Man, I always loved it too. I was a UConn fan. Just those UConn-Syracuse games, the five overtime game. I mean, those things just bring back incredible memories. The Big East tournament from back in the day, like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, until maybe like 2008, those years, 2010, some of the best basketball I've watched. And, you know, the Big East tournament has fallen apart. The bracket or the conference has changed, but still, conference tournaments are great. Phenomenal time of the year. We've come down, we've survived February, and we're into March, and it is time for college basketball. Before we start tonight, I do want to say that we are coming to you as a podcast that is using the messaging app Signal. That's right, Signal, the official messaging app of Double Down Trent. Now, there's a little bit of, fine print there, but hey. We're using Signal. So exciting start to the episode, boys. Now, Mr. Model, I want to say selfishly, you know, I haven't been paying attention too much to college basketball. Normally, I like I was saying before, once the Super Bowl ends, I kind of, you know, have this withdrawal period where I'm just depressed. There's no sports and I don't really watch anything. I know there's college basketball. I know there's NBA. I know there's NHL. But I go into a self-inflicted hibernation period. I don't want to watch it. And then I slowly come back. You, though, you've been in the lab. You've been
all
busy,
in.
My friend. So give the listeners the data here, my friend. Tell them what you were doing with your model.
Yeah, so this is the first year. We've talked a little bit about it in the past. This is the first year that I've really been betting college basketball with a machine learning model that I've put together over the summer. It's been a total blast. There's been total highs and some total lows and everything in between. And I just wanted to do a quick rundown with you all of kind of giving a sneak peek behind the curtain of where we stand currently. Now, we have a couple more weeks of basketball, so maybe we'll touch on this one more time at the end of the season. But just wanted to do a quick check-in right now. So at a high level, Operation Don't Lose Money has been successful. Okay, let me just start right there. Full stop. as from my first year. So that's been good. So I'm up. So far, I've placed 300 bets. And out of those 300 bets, I've hit 171 have been wins, 132 have been losses, and that's good for about 56% accuracy, which to me is phenomenal accuracy the first time I do it.
Professionals go for 55%, so you're thriving.
Exactly right. And the important thing to think about there, it's also based on the average line that you're getting. So like if you get a minus 110 is your average line, then you need to be, I think that translates to what, 52.4% or something like that. But let me just do it.
Yeah, you're our math guy. You're asking me. 52.4.
Yeah, 52.4. So yeah, it's like you need to beat the vig. So doing anything beyond that, you should be profitable. But for me, I've been able to get the average odds of minus 108. So to me, I've kind of been beating that 1010 by just getting better odds, and that's right around 52%. So to me, it's been a really fun season. It's been going really well so far, and I'm just going to walk you guys through a little bit of the highs and lows.
So before you do that, though, I want maybe just explain to the listeners, like minus 110, minus 108, how do you search that out, and like what does that mean? Is that just a book trying to get people to put action on them as opposed to their competitors, like offering better odds?
Yeah, so some books will do this with college basketball just because there's so many games and they like to be be distinguished and be distinct from other sports books. So one of the books that I use will offer at opening, they'll offer minus 108 on both sides instead of minus 110. And, you know, just those, you know, minus 108 to 110 doesn't seem like a whole lot, but in implied probability, it's actually a pretty big jump. So whenever I can get better odds in minus 110, I'll always take it. And whenever I can compare the odds across both books, I'll always go with the book that gives me the better odds.
Got it. Okay. So would you recommend if people are going to start doing this, maybe try and play along to look at multiple books before they put their bets down?
100%. I think you're spot on. I think if you are not using more than one book, it's a huge disservice because you are stuck to whatever odds that you see. Line shopping is huge. You are going to make your profits increase way more than what if you were like to improve your model, for example. If you did some line shopping across 2, 3, 4 books, then that's going to be a huge value add for you.
Very interesting. I got to keep my eye out on those better lines.
Okay, so one of the things, speaking of lines, one of the things that I also track with how I do is closing line value. So this is something that's highly debated on the cesspool that is gambling Twitter. And we're not going to go into all the intricacies, but just think of it as like, you know, when I placed my bet, did the line move with me or against me? And when the game started, what was the line when the game started? So like, for example, if I place my bet of Arizona State -3, -110, and then, you know, 2 hours later, the game starts and the odds are Arizona State -3, -120. So the line moved with me in that more people were betting -3 and the line kind of crept up. So that mean I would gain the closing line value, and I'm not going to do the calculations and all the boring stuff here, but it's really just a way for you to measure, are you beating people, other people in the market with where the line is heading, or are you behind and getting the worst line? So for me, the call out of one of the things I've really been proud of is I have positive closing line value. I have like 3.25% closing line value, which is just a way to say, okay, I've been beating the market because I've been getting my bets in early before the line has moved with me.
So you can only really calculate that though after the bet has been made, right? You can't like go searching for closing line value, right?
Exactly right. So I go every night, I place my bets, I do a lot of overnights. So then when the games start the following night, after all the games are done, I'll go back and look at what the line closed at when the game started, and I'll calculate my closing line value. Yeah.
And that's giving you confidence in your model, right? So if you're getting positive closing line value, that means what you're identifying as winners is a strong pick.
Yeah. So, the hypothesis is that the market is like the most efficient thing out there. So if the market moves with you, it's kind of a signal that your model is going to be correct in the long term. And if you're going like against it and the market moves against you, so like let's say I did Arizona State -3 and then it suddenly moved to Arizona State -1 because all these people piled in on whoever they were playing, then that means my model maybe isn't as good as what the market expects or actually
you almost would need to tinker with your model if that was the case, right? If you were losing that much value. So to kind of pile on here, it's amazing that it's that sharp because – yeah, to the model's point, if the number was going the other way, he would probably have to spend another three months in the lab fixing the model. Right now, it looks like you've dialed in something that's pretty precise, and if anything, it's gearing us towards good bets, right? That's really what you're honing
exactly
in.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah, if I was getting negative closing line value, then I knew that I would not be profitable long term. I would just be getting lucky if I was profitable in the short term.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. I don't know if you know this answer or not, but you got positive closing line value, right? It's a percentage of your calculation.
I calculated it as a percent, and this is going into the cesspool. It can get calculated a couple of different ways, but yeah, I calculated it as a percent.
Okay. So how do you compare yours to maybe successful, maybe sports books or other people that have models? Like where would you say yours fell in comparison to other people that are out there doing this?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've actually put that question out to a couple of folks on gambling Twitter about like, hey, what is good closing line value? I'm like, is it a positive 1%? Is it a positive 2%? Like, I know I have 3%, but I actually don't know what other people have. So I'm hopefully sharing this with the idea that maybe someone else tells me, oh yeah, I put in 300, 400, 500 bets in college basketball. And my closing line value is this, just as like another measuring stick, because I have freaking no idea right now.
That's interesting. I wonder if it's like a trade secret, like they don't want you to see how their sausage is made. But maybe we can get somebody out. We should probably look for an interview maybe with someone that can talk to that.
That'd be really fun. Yeah, that'd be really fun. So two things for two also things
I just want to coordinate with them.
Well done, Hunter. Good point.
Two things to cover for a sec. So, I've been betting where I put at least one unit on every bet. And then sometimes when my model is so, distinct from what the line is on the sports book, I will sometimes place two, three or four units, on that bet. And it's kind of like a feel for me. So if I had only placed one unit on every single bet that I did this year, I would be up something like 25 units, call it, or so. Okay, so if I was just placing one bet, 25 units, like, that's great. But because I've been doing more, I'm actually up to about 39 units.
Wow.
And I'm actually up more tonight, but for when we did the podcast agenda, about 39 units. So like that's been a nice thing too, that as the model is farther away from what the line is, it's actually tended to be more accurate. Now, the sample size is really low, but I can kind of take higher risk on some of those and get better payoffs by betting a little bit more.
So talk to that. So you determine those higher unit games based on what? The difference in the wins, I guess, the score of the two teams, right?
So I've been betting spreads and totals. A good game example actually happened earlier today. Massachusetts played St. Joseph's, and the line that opened was UMass -3. Now, my model had UMass as a 12-point favorite, or as what my model thought UMass would win by 12 points. So I looked at that one, and that was a 9-point discrepancy between the line and what my model said. And 9 points tend to be more than what I bet. I usually bet five, like a difference of five or more. So I went heavier on that UMass game earlier today.
What was the final score, Mr. Model, for those who didn't get to see the outcome? Let everybody know, because I actually did see the final score. It was quite close.
It was a fun one to watch. I think UMass put up 100 points, and I think St. Joe's put up like 60 something. Yeah, it was a fun one to have on during the day.
Imagine if you'd given out UMass as a best bet. I love it.
I'll admit I'm on a Slack channel that has 3,500 people, and I pinged it last night with the pick. So I actually did put something out there last night of my Woo! Model like UMass minus three.
Putting your well balls done, on sir. The table.
Well done, sir.
Love it.
Yeah. okay, but so to kind of close this out a little bit, so to answer the questions, how do we know it's not just luck and my results are replicable? Well, we know that because, one, the sample size is pretty decent. I've made over 300 bets, and we're, you know, I'm hitting 56% right now. So that's a good number versus like doing 10 bets. Like, that's not, you can't really generalize from there. Number two, the closing line value is positive, and whatever 3% is compared to others, like, that seems to be pretty good. So that gives me a positive sign that I think this will be, you know, profitable if I were to do it again next year. And then the third thing, one of the other things I look at is I look across every week. So, you know, my model hasn't been profitable every week. I've had some weeks where I've lost money, but on the whole, it's been profitable, you know, I think 10 out of the 13 weeks that I've been doing this so far. And I just like to see that consistency as well, that there hasn't been these huge discrepancies of maybe 1 week that was up big and then a bunch more that were actually down. So I like to win little bit by bit.
A quick observation, nobody who's listening can see your chart, but I just wanted to note this. I've been looking at your chart now for as long as we've been recording. Have you drawn any, this is just me being a weirdo, any correlation to your three negative weeks here are Christmas, Martin Luther King, and the Super Bowl?
That is an interesting analysis.
I mean, I know there's not like Martin Luther King is not technically a holiday, but it's three weekend day where, I mean, I know you're not betting NBA. There's a lot of NBA on that Monday.
A lot of NBA.
You know? I just think of it as like a holiday and there's more traveling, more games and stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe overlooking at it. And then Super Bowl week. I don't know. Maybe the market is more sharper on those holiday things. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there as a weird conspiracy.
I think the thing that occurs to me is that there's actually less games those weeks because of the holiday. So I remember that, you know, that week of Christmas, I only placed, you know, half the bets that I typically do just because teams were off on holidays. And I specifically remember one of my worst beats of the season happening in that week, where if it had been, and I had multiple units on it, and if that had come through, I would have been really positive that week. So yeah, there's definitely some things where probably with the holiday, there's just less games happening. And then, you know, if I had bet more, then there's just high variance.
I like that observation though, Coulter. Gotta find the trends.
I mean, I'm looking at the green and red and I'm thinking, hey, the model has so many green weeks. What do the red weeks mean here? And I'm just trying to think of what they are. But yeah, to his point, and again, nobody can see this. Yeah, he only had 15 bets placed during the week of December 21st to 27th. I like how you have that organized too.
Yeah.
That little breakout's cool.
I wanted to ask one more question, Mr. Model. So you were talking about when you decide to place a larger unit bet, and I guess those numbers are kind of subjective. So talk to me through that, because like when we talk about football, we always say like, oh, this is the key numbers. There's 3 and 7. There's numbers that happen a lot. In basketball, that's not really the case. I mean, are you looking at like two? I mean, those games don't usually end in the difference of, you know, what you would score in a bucket, 2 or 3, right? So like, where do you draw the line of, all right, this is a bigger unit bet because the number is so much different?
Yeah, it's purely just based on my gut feel and what the model is telling me about the matchup of the game. So like, for example, if I have two teams playing and the line is a pick 'em, but I have one team that I think is going to win by 15, then I'm like, okay, I think I should probably place a couple units on that one just because, you know, and I've checked injuries and I've done my full betting process before considering this. Then that to me is worth a higher risk just because I think it's more likely to come through versus a pick 'em game where the line is, you know, the line is 0 and my model has 3. Right.
Yeah.
That's a game I would just skip.
I would love to drill in maybe for a follow up for next week, your big unit bets and what that specific win percentage was.
Yeah, that'd be a great thing to look at, especially at the end of the season, to see exactly how those landed. I'll tell you, I can't not mention it just because it's one of my worst beats of the season. One of my bigger bets, one of the reasons I was down one of these weeks, I had Iowa, Minnesota They were playing the week of Christmas, may have been Christmas night, if I remember. And I had the under in that game. And I think the under was probably up around 155, 160. And I was going into the last minute, and they needed to score like more than 10 points or more than 15 points in the last minute. And I was like, oh, I got this. And boom, one thing led to another. They kept hitting threes and foul shots, and I got totally sunk. And that's like something that stuck with me and been a fun story. It hurt at the time, but that was a fun one.
If I can bring up one of our favorite movies, Rounders, you very rarely remember the big pots, but you always remember the bad losses.
That is so true. Yeah, that is so true. So just to close this out, a couple things of like, what lessons have I learned by doing that? This is my first year to really jump in with 2 feet for doing this college basketball betting. I think the first one is that I would love to have some improvements around my model itself with additional data. And for example, I've already identified some data sources that I can get from like KenPom that will help me, for example, with the length and the height of a team, and pull that in as a data point. So for example, like I know Florida State this year is one of the tallest and longest teams in the country. And I think that helps them, you know, on defense and offense. You know, I'm also suspect like Syracuse, just because of the system that they play with the 2-3 zone, also tends to have really guys who are really tall and long. So I'm going to bring that in as like a data point for next year to see if that helps me predict some of these games better. So I'll do a bunch more data to see if I can make my model more accurate.
Yeah, there's always like weird things that I always look at when I'm doing my brackets. Like you said, Syracuse runs a 2-3 zone. That's tough if you don't play against them. Teams like West Virginia, they run a really intense full court press. Like, you know, there's things that you know as a fan watching, but it's hard to kind of put a value to that and actually get data from it.
And I hate to break this to you, but Huggins has stopped the full court press for West Virginia recently, unfortunately.
See, this is the things I need to know. So I've been out of the game for last month, and now I'm coming back in. Huggy Bear's not pressing anymore?
He's not pressing. He gave that up.
Jesus, oh, man, he's seen it all now.
They're still pretty good on defense, but they stopped the press. All right, so the second thing I want to get better at, and this has been a total fascination for me, is how I time my bets to optimize my closing line value. So one of the things I've noticed, and I should look at this, and we can talk about it at the end of the year, is that if my model likes an under, the betting market will tend to take something at open. It'll go up. People like to bet overs. It'll go up, and then it'll come back down. And I've seen this time and time again this year with teams like Citadel and Virginia Military Academy. These guys play super high pace, like super fast, super short possessions, lots of points, lots of turnovers, lots of running up and down the court. And, you know, the line opens at like 160, and my model already likes it below 160, and it's good enough to bet. But I actually hold off. And I've had to learn this the hard way. I don't bet it at open. I let it go all overnight. I let it go through the morning, and it'll tick up to like 161, 162. And then that's when I'll lock in something before it tends to come back down by game time. And it doesn't happen for every game, obviously, but that's just one of the trends that I've noticed kind of throughout the year.
Interesting. So the other thing I would like you to look at with that is the timing of your bets. So like, are you placing bets the day of, or are you just kind of like looking as an advanced bettor?
Yeah, I'd say 75% of my bets are placed the night before the games. Okay. So like tonight, we're recording this on March 4th. I will place a number of bets tonight for the games that are happening tomorrow.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. Any other little tips and things you're learning about the model that you want to reflect back on?
Yeah, I think the last thing that I'm interested to explore more is that it's not legal in the U.S. yet, but I think that there will be stuff coming soon. A peer-to-peer exchange sportsbook. So this is a sportsbook where you're not actually betting with the book entering the lines and setting the spreads and totals, but there's actually another human person, another bettor on the other side setting the line and the odds. So what this allows you to do is that instead of taking Arizona State -3, -110, I can actually go on an exchange and say, okay, I want Arizona State -3 for plus 100, right, which translates to 50%. So there's basically no vig on this bet, and it gives me even better odds than if I had gone to a sports book and made that same bet.
I kind of like it. It's taking our crossfire bets and just putting it out to the world.
Exactly right. And it's a huge value add, because you might not win more, but you actually earn more on the bets that you win.
Do we need to edit this segment out and not publish this out to the people?
Like, I was about to say, are we on to something here?
I think we might be, guys.
So are the three things. Yeah, those are the three things I'm thinking about for next year, and can't wait for the next season to come around and give it another go.
I mean, 56%, that's unbelievable. My last question this was, how would you compare your first season of college basketball modeling to your first one of college football modeling?
Oh, way better.
Okay.
So I got crushed, and this has been like a learning process for sure. My first college football betting season, I focused on money lines because I really wanted to incentivize my bet with the team, because they're incentivized to win and not incentivized to like beat a team by 2 or 3 or 4 or 14 or whatever. But I just didn't have it right. I've learned a ton. I still think the college football season is one of high variance. I still think that there's possibility there, but I actually like college basketball even more, just because there's 350 plus teams, and it's really hard for bookmakers to kind of keep an eye on all the teams and all the games. There's just so much happening, and there's more opportunity for us to find a line that is valuable to bet.
Very interesting, my friend. Well, like we said, we're getting into, you know, conference tournament season, and some are underway, some are coming. And then obviously we got March Madness. So you know me, I'm the man. I don't have a model like you do, but I like to get in the action. I've been dormant betting since I took it down the chin on the Super Bowl. So I'm looking to get back in, my friend. So give me some stuff here. What can I do to get some value in some of these conference tournaments?
I'm going to try to draw you in here, and I'm just going to see if we can talk through an example of, even if you don't have a model and you don't do your own ML stuff, how could you use kind of a data-driven approach to see if there's an edge in some of these conference tournaments? And we're going to use the Southern Conference here as an example. So let me first give you kind of my high level process for how I think about this in the first place. So if I wanted to find, you know, my goal is to try to identify, is a team worth betting? So my step number one is I'm going to find the likelihood of team A to beat team B. So maybe it's 50%, exactly even, maybe it's 70%. Whatever it is, right? And then I'm going to do that for each matchup in the conference tournament. So we'll talk through the Southern Conference here, and we'll use UNC Greensboro as an example, and we'll go through all of that later. So once I know the likelihood of UNC Greensboro to beat each of their opponents, I can multiply those percents together to get the team's chance to win the conference championship as a whole. So like they start in the quarterfinals, what are the odds that they win that game? Semifinals, odds to win that game. Championship game, what are the odds to win that game? Once I have that all kind of multiplied together, I can convert that probability into odds, and then I can compare the odds that I have to what the sports book is putting out in terms of, is this team a possible championship, conference championship winner? Does it all make sense?
It does, but I'm not going to lie to you. That sounds like a lot of work for me.
It's not super easy or fast, but it's something that wouldn't be too hard for folks to do. And okay, Let's just go through an example here.
You know what I'm going to do, though? I'm going to message you through the Signal app, which is the official messaging app of Double Down.
Nice.
Sorry,
placement.
Take it away.
Nice placement. All right, so step number one. So first, we're going to find the likelihood of like UNC Greensboro beating each of the teams that they may play in the Southern Conference tournament. So, UNC Greensboro just happens to start in the quarterfinals. Their opponent, whoever wins this the first round, would either be Citadel or Western Carolina, and we can actually use websites that are publicly available. We have websites like KenPom, we have Haslametrics, we have Bart Torvik. There's these websites online who are really good that will actually say, what is the likelihood of Team A beating Team B? Or what is the likelihood of UNC Greensboro? Like, what is the spread? We can just go look that up on these websites for free, except KenPom, which is you have to pay a little bit. So I know, based on KenPom, for example, that UNC Greensboro is a 13-point favorite over Citadel and Western Carolina, according to KenPom. And in games where the favorite is favored by 13 points, they tend to win 90% of the time. So for that first game, we know, boom, 90% UNC Greensboro likely to win. Now, if UNC Greensboro were to move on, they would likely play East Tennessee State in their semifinal matchup. And based on doing that same process, you know, what would the UNC Greensboro would likely be favored by about 3 points based on KenPom. In games where the favorite is favored by 3 points, it's 62% of the time the favorite wins. And I'm getting that spread to Moneyline conversion just based on like an online calculator I found for free. So once we get their full path to the championship, so they would play Citadel, 90% chance likely to win. They would play East Tennessee State, maybe, or Chattanooga, it'd depend. They'll say 62% of the chance that they would win. And then in the championship, KenPom has them as actually 43% chance to win against the likely opponent of Furman. So we multiply that together, 90, 62, and 43, and we get a 24% chance to win the Southern Conference in general. And when we change that implied probability to odds, that puts them right around plus 320 or so. So my thought process then is, okay, I'm going to know that UNCG is around 320, 315, 325. And if I see something that's better than that, if I see them at plus 400, plus 380, you know, that's something that I may want to bet because there's probably a little edge there if I did my numbers correctly.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Are you doing this for every conference tournament or are you just going to pick a few?
You know, honestly, I probably won't do it for any conference tournaments. I think I'm going to continue to bet my game by game matchups, which is what my model has done for both spread and totals. And I won't do anything in terms of like conference championship future, something like that.
Okay. And I want
to. Is that because of the VIG, Mr. Model, or no?
Yes. It's partly, I think. Most of all, it's just like taking resources away from, I just don't have that time to be able to go and kind of run those numbers and crunch it. And I don't think my numbers
will
be better.
They're also harder to find too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yes.
The market's a little less liquid on, like you can't find Southern. I was just looking it up. I couldn't find it.
Exactly right. I was hoping we'd have numbers posted tonight so that we could actually compare plus 320 to what we're actually seeing in the market right now.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
But it's not. I haven't found it yet.
But we got to get a Las Vegas consultant.
That would be something. Do you think
that's another signal?
Get them on the Signal app. Come on. Do you think these numbers though are more available for some of those bigger tournaments, like the Big Ten tournament? Like, are those numbers that may be posted right now?
Big Ten is out, I believe.
Yeah. So a lot of them are out. And if you go on stuff like Circa Sports or Bovada or a lot of other sports books have it. So for example, like I easily like. I see Patriot League, I see West Coast, I see America East. There is a lot of conference tournaments already posted. For whatever reason, the Southern, the one example that we use, just doesn't seem to be posted right now.
Interesting. Books do not like the Southern Conference.
I was going to say the one we can profit on, of course, is taken off the board.
All right. This was wild, Mr. Model. You know, I think we'll have people be interested in this. So maybe – is this going to apply for the tournament? Like, can we look at this and make this real for the March Madness?
Absolutely. And yeah, that's why I wanted to do that now. That's a great segue. So this is exactly what you can do for March Madness when you're filling out your bracket. You can go to a free website like Bart Torvik or Haslam Metrics, and you can literally look up, okay, UNC Greensboro is playing Gonzaga. What is the spread going to be? And then you can find the spread. It'd probably be like Gonzaga by 20. And then you could find a converter to basically say, okay, what percent of the time is a 20-point favorite win that game? It's probably like 95%. So then you know that you kind of have a little data-driven approach to filling out your bracket and might be more thoughtful about when to pick an upset versus when to pick a favorite.
Now, that is the insight that I think the common man is going to be – and woman, let's be fair – would like to hear from us. So that is interesting, folks. You're going to want to listen to not just this episode and crunch these data, but we're probably going to keep doing this as we get to the tournament. So you're going to want to listen. And should we throw it out there that if anyone wants a pick, maybe they message us through the Signal app?
If they can find us.
That's true. All right. So let's look at the big tournament, the March Madness tournament, because I threw out a couple of, I think, fun scenarios that my petty brain likes to look at. So I just got off the high of the Super Bowl where I was picking, like, you know, all kinds of futures bets and prop bets and things like that. So I still have my prop hat on. So I threw out two props for both of you that I wanted to get your opinions on here. So the first one is pretty straightforward. Mr. Mono, we talked about this one. I think it's pretty easy to calculate. But if I were to give you the option right now, and you both are going to weigh in on this one, would you rather take Gonzaga to win the whole tournament or the field? Who are you taking? We'll start with Mr. Model.
Well, obviously, it all depends on the odds that you're giving me. But I will admit, I really like Gonzaga this year. I think I would be jumping on their bandwagon and seeing if they could win out. Now, the odds would obviously be important for what my profit is there. But that's the team that I think has just been flying high and looking really good.
If I were to say this is just like our typical crossfire bet where you pick Gonzaga or the field and someone could cross it, you're going Gonzaga?
Oh, no. If it's 50-50, I'm going the field.
Okay. Coulter, what are you doing here?
I'm fading Gonzaga.
Ooh, okay.
I would take the field 66%. I like there's too many teams. We'll get into the teams that Mr. Model and I somehow both liked without talking to each other before. But yeah, no, I like the field versus Gonzaga. I'm going to fade the Zags this year.
Okay. I probably would fade him too. I think I'm taking the field because I got my eyes on a team in this next prop bet that I'm going to throw out there, which is, would you take a Big Ten team to win it versus the field, Mr. Model?
Yeah, and so I wanted to play bookmaker on this one. So I wanted to give you some odds, and I wanted to talk you through this. So I tried to do a little homework before the podcast in lieu of setting this up. So I would put the odds on a Big Ten team winning the tournament right around 40%, and I would give the field at 62%. So if you were going to take a big, and I even built some vig into these odds. So if you were going to take a Big Ten team, you would get +30 on your side, or the field would be -150 on the other side. And the way I did that is I added up a bunch of the implied probability for Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, et cetera, the Big Ten teams, to try to estimate kind of what their likelihood to win is. And then I tried to give them a little buffer because some of those teams may actually play each other, thereby canceling the percents. And this is kind of where I just landed at a rough side. So if you had to pick, if you had to take Big Ten team winning the tournament at +130 or the field non-Big Ten at -150, what would you take?
I think I'm taking the Big Ten there. I mean, I'm getting plus money. It's not like this is a long shot where you put me, the odds are like plus, you know, 1,000. +130 to me is good numbers. And then you're telling me I get Michigan, Illinois, Ohio State. I mean, those are the three that I like a lot. I mean, how could you not? I think that's the play here. Coulter, what are you thinking on these ones?
I kind of like the field as well here versus the Big Ten. If I were to go with the Big Ten team, or I think what I would do is I would take the field and then I'd probably throw a little bit on Michigan and then maybe sprinkle some on Ohio State. I don't like some of these other teams as much. Illinois looked really good the other night and they're a pretty fun team. But I've seen that their value has kind of gotten sucked dry since that big win. I think they're as little as 9-1, which I find flabbergasting at this point. Fun team. And I enjoyed watching them play the other night. I just don't think they're going to win the whole tournament. And at 9-1, you're not getting enough value for that proposition, right? We're talking about winning the tournament, right?
The big tournament.
I could really only see Michigan doing of this crop of teams and like maybe Ohio State. And so I would probably take the field and then maybe throw like a two unit size of one Michigan and then maybe just a fun little pizza bet on Ohio State and have myself covered all angles.
Okay. Well, Coulter, you actually were really well aligned with some of the picks that the model laid out without connecting. You guys have landed on some teams that you like here. So why don't you give us the few that you like, Coulter, and then we'll compare it with Mr. Models.
Yeah, I'm going to hit the audience to the big note that there's no value in any of these right now. The bookie is like a vampire and sucked the value dry, like a blood-sucking vampire. But these are the ones that I like. I honestly don't even know if I'm going to put my own money on them just because they're so little. But I like Michigan, as I just mentioned. Houston 16-1 is good value right now, or not great value, but I like that. Ohio State 26-1 here. And then West Virginia and Florida State at the models book at 35-1. I actually would place bets on those. And I think we are in alignment on those two plays, right, Mr. Model?
Yeah, we're aligned on a couple more of those plays than just those two that you just mentioned. So
I'll keep going. I've got Oregon and Florida as my long shot fun ones, 110-1 and Florida 135-1. These are two preseason teams that were predicted to be a lot better than this, and they're going to both make it. So there's not even like a speculation like there is for some of these teams, like Rutgers or a UConn if they're on the bubble, or even a Duke for that matter. I think Oregon and Florida are well entrenched in this tournament. They're not really on the bubble like some of these other teams. So I like them a lot. I think Oregon has been to the Final Four before, and I think Florida has the talent of a Final Four team. You can't forget that they've had some complications of their season, some of their star players being injured and being sidelined. So I think there's some definite value in the long shots there.
This is great because this is where we just lined up and we hadn't talked before the podcast. I love some of those plays, and I had actually placed futures on these guys in either November or December when the season started, and have just been sitting on them, see how they actually turned out. Now, to be totally clear, some of my future bets are garbage, right? Like they're going to be totally worthless, and some of the future bets are turning into good investments. So two of the not good ones, but I'll still take, are Oregon and Florida. I got both of them at 9-1 plus 9,000, 90-1 plus 9,000 for both of them. I still think those could actually get to be decent bets when the tournament comes around. The huge thing for Florida is that they lost their best player, Keontae Johnson, early in the year when he collapsed on the court. And right. You know, if he had been around all season, I think that 9,000 bet would have been significantly would have turned into a little gem. But that was a tough break, and you got to root for his health and see if he's able to come back and play basketball again. For the other ones that you mentioned, Houston, Ohio State, West Virginia, and Florida State, I also own futures on as well, and those will all be teams I'll be rooting for. I unfortunately do not have anything on Michigan or Gonzaga at this point. So I just, the odds were crazy so early in the season, and I didn't want to take anything below 1,000. Michigan I could have got, and I just left them off the hook. I just didn't trust it. Gonzaga, the odds were just seemed too crazy for me, and I just never really sniffed anything.
And they still are. They're just a team, though. Like, when I fill out my bracket, I never can trust Gonzaga to win the whole thing. I mean, they obviously got in the Final Four, make good runs, they've got great teams. But from everything I'm hearing this year, they're saying that this is the best team that Mark Few's had. So whatever that's worth, we'll see what happens as it plays out here. All right. Mr. Model, you want to highlight some of the big conference tournaments and when they're starting?
I just I put this in our agenda. I just love all this action. We have stuff going on every day for the next, 10 days, all this conference tournament. Even today, the first game that started was around, I think, 11 a.m. Eastern time. They're starting in the morning. They're going all day. College basketball is just glorious. So tomorrow, the Southern Conference actually starts. The Big East, like Pac-12, Big 10, Big 12, et cetera, they really don't get going until later next week. But you can watch some of the mid-majors and enjoy some of the teams that are playing on now. And I'm all in. I'm there.
All in. And the beauty of working from home right now, too, is I just flip on the TV. I was watching my Richmond Spiders in the A-10 tournament. Unfortunately, they suffered
a tough loss. What happened to them?
I don't even want to talk about it. They were ranked at one point in the season pretty highly. I think they're like up to 16 or
18. I was watching them with my dad on Friday night, and they collapsed then, too.
You know, it seems like they couldn't score down the stretch. The game I was watching today against Duquesne, they went the final 9 minutes, they didn't hit a shot from the floor. All their points came from foul shots. And it's like, you just can't compete in the tournaments when you can't score from the floor if you're relying only on foul shots. So I think their shot at the tournament is completely dead now. They had a major long shot. They probably needed to win the A-10 to get in, and that did not happen. But yeah, I want to like let the listeners know, too, that this has been a tradition of mine since, I think, 2008, maybe 2009, is that I've taken the Thursday and Friday, the first 2 days of the tournament, off of work just to sit back and watch March Madness. And I, you know, when I first started doing it, I used to be like, nah, I'm just taking some PTO, I'm doing some things. And then I finally lead into it. I was like, listen, this is PTO. I'm taking these days off to watch the first 2 days of the tournament. You know, turn some heads, but this year, you know, I don't even think I need to take the day off. I think I can just turn the TV on and watch.
I think that's going to be spot on. Yeah, I'm already planning on spending some time and having some beers on Friday. And the thing you need to worry about, the scheduling this year, it starts on a Friday and not on a Thursday. How about that?
I know. It threw me off. I was like, what the hell? They're not doing the Thursday, Friday? But I guess because we're working from home, it really doesn't matter to me, right? Because now we're getting a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You get the Monday, which normally you got the hangover day. That's the day when you're like, oh, shit, it's back to reality. There's no sports all day. Now they got the games going all day long, and I think the reason they did this, obviously they want to get primetime viewership on Monday, but I think now you can watch every single game. I don't think they're staggering, like overlapping the starts of these games, if I'm not mistaken.
That I don't know.
Yeah, I could be wrong about that. Maybe that's as they get to the next rounds, but.
You're saying that they're not going to have like the traditional timing of like the 12s and stuff?
I think that's right. I think they're going to play it at 12 and 2. Like, there's not going to be like a game that starts at 12 and a game that starts at like 12:30. I could be wrong about that, but I thought I saw they staggered the games. Maybe that's for the next round. I don't know. But it is a phenomenal time of year. March Madness is here to save us, bring us out of the sports lull, at least mine. But Coulter, you know what? We still got NFL. NFL never leaves our system. It is just an ever-present being. And the hot stove is cooking. And I've been hearing things. I actually heard the Cardinals owner was talking on SiriusXM that he thinks that the amount of talent that's going to change rosters this year, he said it was seismic. And I think obviously that's got a lot to do with the cap and, you know, things happening. Quarterbacks might be moving. But from our gambling standpoint, there's still a lot of interesting things for us to consider, especially because you hit on some of these futures. So give me a little NFL.
Yeah, we like to call this the pre-preseason because there aren't even odds on some of the two things that I want to hand out to our listeners. But there's a lot of logic, I think, behind the two things I'm going to hand out. So I just want to put them on everyone's radar early on with the NFL. And to your point about the upheaval, it makes it hard to do this kind of like pre-preseason handicapping because, A, we don't have odds. And, B, to your point, there's going to be a huge roster turnover here in about – say 13 days when the league year starts again on March 17th. With that said, I did win on Kevin Stefanski last year, and so I'm going to look back to that prop pool of coach in the year. This is Double Down Trim. We like talking coaches here, right?
Absolutely.
I'm on brand. It's fitting that I won with the coach of the year, and I'm going right back to the well. Brandon Staley is taking over in L.A., and I'm following my Stefanski logic here. New coach replacing a bad coach equals a quick turnaround. He has Justin Herbert, so that makes it even more logical. I actually like Herbert's odds to win MVP. If he, is going to be out there in LA competing with Patrick Mahomes, I really think, you know, Herbert is going to obviously struggle at times in that competition, but I think the upside is definitely there. The Chargers are going to have a healthier defense as well. And they're also going to have those two chances to beat the Chiefs, as I just mentioned. So the opportunity is there for them to set a high bar. And they have the LA pop factor. It's a popular market. They're going to be hosting the Super Bowl. I think good things are going to happen to the Rams and the Chargers generally. So, again, I like Brandon Staley as coach of the year. Again, odds not available for that. But when they do come out, I really recommend the listeners of DDT to jump on those. And then a team win total. We're probably not going to see these until after the draft, I would imagine. But in case they do come out before then, I like the Atlanta Falcons. I'm projecting their win total to come out at 6.5. I like it over. I think it's a great value if that's the opener, because I think they have a division that's going to be perceived as super strong, and people are going to – they're really going to be hung on the 6.5. Like, I think that's really going to be the line here because it's a tough division. But I actually see the division as a weakness. You have Tampa Bay with the Super Bowl hangover. You have the Saints with a bad cap situation, and you have the Panthers – who have betrayed their quarterback's trust in Teddy Bridgewater and have kind of put themselves out there on the plank of quarterback boom bust. They have to almost acquire a new one at this point because they've gone so all in already on Matt Stafford and the draft rumors and Deshaun Watson and all that stuff. I think the Falcons have a better defense than most people realize. They finished in the top half of the league in most defensive categories last year. They lost a ton of close games in 2020. I don't know if you remember that in the first half of the season, they were horribly coached by Dan Quinn. That will be mentioned a lot in the preseason. I'm sure I'm not going to be the only person that's fawning over the fact the Falcons lost a couple close games, but the injury luck was really bad for this team. And then I think this is an important factor here. The players on this team have won before, so that helps you when you're doing a quick rebuild. They have a new coach as well in Arthur Smith. Maybe look for him for coach of the year. I like the Atlanta Falcons. I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but 6.5 is low. I think they're going to surprise people. I would not be surprised if this team is 8-8 at the end of the year. So that would be two of my preseason best bets. Brandon Staley, coach of the year, Falcons over 6.5.
I love it. And I think we'll obviously dive into this as we get close to the NFL season here. But looking at teams that have new coaches come in with talented rosters, like those two teams that you laid out there, we hammered on the Chargers and the Falcons and their terrible coaching decisions. And that obviously played into
some of the worst of ever, right?
Yeah. I mean, historic losses by Dan Quinn and our guy, Anthony Lynn. So those guys are out. We can't hammer on them anymore, but those are definitely opportunities for those teams to, I guess, scoop in. And I always look at the playoff teams from the year before. There's always change. There's always teams that were down in the basement that all of a sudden have a great year, make the playoffs, and that talent shifts. I mean, last year, just off the top of my head, Cleveland and Arizona. Teams the year before, terrible, did make the playoffs, and then all of a sudden now there are good teams, they make the playoffs, and they jump in. So there's always those flips, and I think that NFC South presents a lot of opportunity. The Chiefs, I mean, not the Chiefs, the Saints, who knows what's going to happen at quarterback. And like you said, Coulter, their cap situation is such a mess that they're going to have to shred that team. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for the Falcons to jump in there. Not to mention that I am very high on Arthur Smith. I think he's a really good coach. All right, what other ones we got before we part ways here at this episode? We got some nice little ditties out there.
Yeah, these are just Josh Allen we'll talk about more, I think, when it comes to May, June, and we seriously start doing the MVP. I think he's going to be a fan favorite. He's somebody I'm going to look at. The Bills narrative makes a lot of sense. As I mentioned about the LA, Herbert and Stafford also makes sense. I think it's going to be a big year for the LA football teams. I definitely don't like Aaron Rodgers. I hate the repeat narrative. He already had his spite season. I think the Packers are going to, I know they got rid of the defensive coordinator and the special teams coach, and those things seem to plague them in the NFC Championship game, but I'm actually going to swerve about that in a weird way. I don't think that actually necessarily helps them next year. I think that actually kind of gives them an inconsistency that I don't necessarily love about Green Bay. So I actually think that team's more like a 10-6 team. I think there's no chance that Rodgers is the MVP or burning money if you put money on him. So just wanted to make those notes about MVP. I like Dolphins. I haven't put money on this one yet, but 280 is out there. This is kind of a hedge against what I just said about Josh Allen. So you kind of get the best value of both worlds. And then you also have the Deshaun Watson trade destination too there. That factor, I think the Dolphins win that division handily if he gets traded there. So plus 280, that's pretty seismic. And that way you don't have to invest money on a Deshaun Watson QB prop because it's kind of stupid, I think. Kind of a waste of cash. Steelers are the same price as the Dolphins. So that's also one in the North, NFC North. What do you guys think about that? Because you have the Ravens as the favorite, and then the Browns kind of emerged, and the Steelers were the team that actually won the division last year, and now they're saying they're plus 280.
I want nothing to do with the Steelers winning that division. I'm going on record early and often.
All right, fair enough. I mean, because the way I look at it is you know that the Bengals can't. I don't we're going to do some fun dart throw long shots, and I can't even put the Bengals on that list because I just don't see it with Burrow's injury and Zach Taylor. But I get what you're saying. The Steelers left me so feeling so bad when they played the Browns, but the value I think might be there. I think the Ravens are a little overrated as we've talked about on this podcast. And then it's really up to the Browns to conquer that division. Are they ready for that? I mean, that's kind of what the bet would be, right? Yep. And you're almost getting 3-1 at a team that finished 12-4 last year.
Yeah. All right. You got some good ones here, though. These ones are interesting.
I was going to say, I have a couple other ones, too. I just mentioned those fun dart throws. The Jaguars 16-1 to win the South. And we were talking about the new quarterback thing. And this is just more like pizza bets. Put $2 on it just for fun or maybe $5. But I mean, new coach, new quarterback, plus weak division. You never know. It's fun. The Raiders 16-1 to win the West. This team beat the Chiefs last year. I'm shocked that a team that beat the Chiefs is that number to win its division in the year following that. I think that's a tremendous accomplishment to beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead. I don't think they're going to win the division, but again, it's $5. Why not have fun? And then the Lions, 30-1. This could be the worst team in football, but this is the highest division win total by a substantial margin. So it's a pure dart throw. Maybe you take the 30-1 for $2 and then you put like a sizable wager on their season win under, because I think they're going to go under probably more likely. But man, 30-1 is insane. As I was just saying, I'm pretty low on the Packers already, looking at 2021-2022 season of NFL. So I don't know. I'm not high on the Lions by any means, but those are just three fun pizza bet dart throws that might be, you know, if you're just
talking through the Lions night. When you talk through the Lions, though, it's like, think about it. The Bears quarterback situation is a mess. Who knows what's going to happen?
Oh, it's absurd. I mean, you've got Dan Campbell, new coach. He can motivate the locker room, but they hated Patricia.
Yep.
Goff has everything in the world to prove. I mean, you can see the storyline there. I mean, they make a couple of good moves in the offseason. They bring back Galladay. All of a sudden, it's like, it's not that bad of a team. You have Swift. Maybe he's a game breaker. Who knows? At 30-1, it's insane that they're actually even putting that out there. I mean, that's the highest number by, I think, the Jaguars and Raiders and the Broncos and Bengals is the other one at 22-1. The Lions are that much worse odds than the Bengals. Those are the longest ones. That's insane. The Jets are 16. That's insane. The Lions are almost double what the Jets are to win the AFC East. That's stupid.
That is wild. That makes no sense to me.
They have a quarterback. The Jets don't have a quarterback. What am I missing here? The Jets are trading Sam Darnold and haven't drafted a QB. The Lions have Jared Goff, who went to the Super Bowl. Am I out of my element here?
Yeah. I mean, the Jets, I don't understand either, but there's so much going on, and we'll talk about it before the draft. They've got so many different routes they can go, and I honestly think that
and you know they're going to screw it up, and you're right. We're going to have more pods to break this down. But, I mean, come on. They're the Jets. They should be the ones that are 30-1. I guess that's the point that I'm trying to make, right?
Yeah, that's exactly
the Bill's juggernaut, Belichick, and you've got Flores, who could be a Belichick juggernaut within himself, right?
Right. I'd rather take those three teams than the other three teams in the NFC North that you've been going against. Yeah,
so. Absolutely. Matt Nagy could be fired mid-season.
He could be fired mid-season.
And we don't know about the Packers coach. I mean, he has great win-loss record, but man, I mean, who knows what could the fallout of losing that home NFC championship game for the Rodgers legacy and his status there. Everything is on the table there, I think, after a loss like that. Because you have to remember they got embarrassed by San Fran the year prior. And then I know the Bucs ended up winning the Super Bowl, so it must taste a little bit different if you're a Packers fan, I guess, this year. But, man, it's a bad one, right? Oh, we're going to be talking about this more. I won't hold you guys up on a Thursday night anymore. But
no, that's going to be on their legacy for a long time. And the fallouts could be quick if something bad happens. I mean, who knows? Rodgers might demand a trade. We never know. All right, gentlemen, that was a fantastic episode. Mr. Model, excellent, excellent information. Remember, use the Signal app if you want to get some picks in. Hit us up, and we'll be doing this again as we lead up to the tournament. And then, obviously, next week we got conference tournaments. So, Mr. Model, we got a lot of action here, my friend.
I can't wait. I'm Derrick Henry. I'll be ready to go a week from today.
Yeah, put the crown on, man. You're carrying it. All right, everybody, that is episode 100. In the books of Double Down Trent, we'll see everybody.
Oh, you buried the lead there.
I know. Hit that in the end. People that are listening, if they made it all the way to the end, they got the little special ditty that's the 100th episode. All right. We'll see everybody next week.
Baby, look at me. Look at me. Your money. And you know what else? You're a big winner tonight. I want to leave. You're a big winner. I'm going to ask you a simple question. I want you to listen to me. Who's the big winner here tonight at the casino? Huh? Mikey, that's who. Mikey's the big winner. Mikey wins.
Fucking
asshole. All right, fine. I'm an asshole, but you know what? You're the big winner tonight, Mikey. You're the big winner in more ways than one.